Hi there, and welcome to The Forward Progress. I'm your host, Joe Redeman. You can find me on Twitter at J-A-Y-A-R-R-N-F-L. And I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Dan Pizzuta, who you can find on Twitter at Dan Pizzuta. Dan, it is the run-up to Week 7. Are you still alive?
In terms of physically, yes. In my survivor pools, I am not.
Yeah, that's like the old Survivor TV show, but you have gotten voted off the island in that one. Is that still running, by the way? Sorry, I know we've digressed already off air to like music and talking about the Grammys, and but like, is Survivor a thing still?
I believe so.
Oh, okay. Are you a reality show guy?
Not really. Let's see. I haven't very lately, but the challenge on MTV was usually my go-to.
Okay.
Yeah, it's basically another professional sport.
That's fair. I mean, I can't say that I didn't play drinking games to the Jersey Shore. So, like, you know, if that counts as a sport, I was also an athlete in college. But, yeah. Anyway, Survivor Leagues, running back from the tangent. You got knocked this week.
Yeah, I did. And the sad part is we've officially gone 6 weeks into the season. It's a double elimination pool and I'm already out, and I get paid to kind of figure out what is going on in the NFL. And I apparently don't know, but you know, when you get knocked out by the Bears beating the Steelers and this past week with the Dolphins coming back down 17 against the Atlanta Falcons, I mean, I guess there's really not much else you can do.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, I was just saying, like, I have probably about as much pocket mobility as Jay Cutler, you know, being that I also slam a beer every Sunday morning before the game. But, you know, man, that's a tough one. That's an absolute tough one.
Yeah. It's not great.
It's trap games, though, like that. You know, I don't love the idea of streaming. Like, for this week, some people who play in stupid, terrible redraft leagues like I do, and, you know, play with stupid, terrible team defenses like I do in some leagues. I'm sorry, Team IDP. I love you all still. But, you know, it's tradition, and my friends are used to it from the home league, and so we still play with defenses. And I'm reading through, you know, our other articles because I like getting other people's opinions. And so I'm looking at the one on 4 for 4. I'm looking at the one on Number Fire. I'm looking at the one on PFF. And I'm just like, no, I absolutely won't stream the Titans. No, I absolutely won't stream the Saints. I don't care that they did well last week. I don't care that they're playing the Browns or the Packers without Rodgers. That's a trap game and a half. Like, I wouldn't be taking the Saints in a survivor pool this week. I wouldn't be taking the Titans. Like, yeah, they're probably going to beat the Browns, but I'm not going to feel good about it. And, you know, this could be the week that the Browns get off the schneid. There's just so many things where I think those are traps. And so that's, like, the Falcons' defense is so bad that I just, that scares me, you know? Not I should have given you this advice a week ago, but
here yeah, we thanks. Are.
There's just going to be, like, a middle finger permanently hoisted on the G-Chat all podcast, isn't there?
Yeah, probably. No, but, I mean, I didn't really feel good with anything else. I mean, the other, you know, big pick there was Denver over the Giants, which, as a Giants fan, I would know, actually, as bad as the Giants have been, to never pick against the Giants ever, because when, not that I thought they were going to win, but I know that's the type of game they do win because they're stupid, and watching them is just so frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that was a huge surprise. God, I don't know what Eli Manning, I don't know what they do with Eli Manning, to be honest, but it's working right now. And a something called Roger Lewis is a starting wide receiver for that team. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, Lewis I don't really have a problem with. That he was actually a pretty good receiver at Bowling Green. So he's, I mean, also, obviously you can't have him as the number one receiver. But it's the other guys that are coming in, like Ed Egan and Tavares King.
What do you mean? Tavares King bounced around from five teams. He's obviously like the best receiver in the league that's secretly been waiting. He's just needed that much time to develop, Dan. Now he's going to take over.
Yeah, he's totally take over. At least Sterling Shepard should be back this week, so that'll be nice.
Fun little fact, too, that I noticed just while we're on the topic of the Giants. This actually came from Tom Kislingberry, who's a writer at DynastyLeagueFootball.com with me. He's at Tom Degenerate on Twitter. And he tweets out amazing graphics every single week. They're fantastic stuff. Usually IDP, because he's on the IDP side of the team with me. But he's been taking a look at snap counts and all that sort of stuff and found out that despite the massive amounts of injuries to every Giants receiver's ankle, Evan Engram didn't actually slot outside that often last week. He still was in the slot or in line a fair amount, which I think is a little bit surprising. I think we all kind of expected him to be, you know, more outside and like Rhett Ellison would be in line or, you know, like taking over some of those receiver snaps. He didn't at all.
Yeah. I've looked at that game a little bit and they still went when they went to 12 personnel. They're still keeping Engram as kind of more of a traditional tight end. They haven't really used him out wide much at all this season. Anytime he is out, it's usually in the slot, but he has been in line most of the time. So I don't know if that's going to change. I would kind of like it to. I'd like them to move him around a little more. I think their best play with him so far this season, he was actually lined up as like the fullback and an H-back, and they had a nice touchdown to him earlier in the season. So I'd like to see him move around more, but at least the important part is they are getting the ball to him, which I think is going to be pretty important going forward because he might be the most reliable option they have.
Right. Yeah. I will say, I mean, probably a little bit of it was game planning too. You know, the Engram's advantage is Engram's advantage over a guy like Aqib Talib is probably a lot less because they're a similar size than, you know, hey, run this route in the slot and you're just bigger than Chris Harris. So that might be a little bit of it, but yeah, I would love to see them, you know, yeah, use him as that movable chess piece, the Jimmy Graham type of guy that the Saints used, you know, early in Graham's career. I think I just expected it like a lot of other people that, you know, while you don't have receivers and you don't want Ed Egan outside, because what's Ed Egan, you know, seriously, like I said on here that I love Travis Rudolph in the preseason, but I don't want Travis Rudolph as my team's number two receiver, you know? And so I would rather have Evan Engram outside than that, but who knows?
I've, as someone who has to watch this offense and root for it to do well, although maybe you don't root for it to do well. I mean, I might not. This kind of being bad thing, I'm kind of okay with it. I probably by the end of the season, I will have talked myself into the idea of Lamar Jackson throwing the ball to Odell Beckham.
Oh my God, that would be amazing.
How?
Sorry, I know this is a family podcast, but I had to drop an F there.
This is fine. No, it deserves it. The first F-bomb of this podcast with Lamar Jackson throwing to Odell Beckham, I think that's totally worth it. But to go back to Engram, I think it's going to be really interesting what they do against Seattle this week. Those are a bunch of very large defenders fast in the secondary. So there's a lot of guys who can cover the tight end. I wonder if he goes wide, if they put Sherman on him, because there's no one else Sherman should really go against.
I love the idea of Sherman going like, I don't know, I'll take Shane Vereen.
I mean, what's probably going to happen is Sherman just stays on one side of the field and whoever goes out there is who he's going to cover. But I think it'll be really interesting to see how the Giants try to match up against the Seattle defense and if Engram does anything worthwhile against that defense.
Yeah, that'll be fun to see. It'll also be good to see Vereen do more things if they, you know, deploy him the right way. And Ben McAdoo is just deciding to do terrible, stupid things sometimes, which I'm not a fan of. You know, why acquire Shane Vereen, one of the best pass-catching backs in the league in his heyday, and then not use him to catch passes? Why, you know, why not do that?
Yeah, I'm not banking on them figuring that out. that ship has sailed.
God, Ben McAdoo just can't figure out the comb-over right, and he can't figure out Shane Vereen usage. Speaking of the Packers connection there between our two favorite franchises, of course, just a quick rundown, too. And this is what I was recording my bumper for this morning, if anyone uses the Bumpers app. I do a little thing called Deep League Diving, where I talk about crazy deep dynasty prospects, like super stupid deep, deeper than we talk about here, to the point where, you know, the topic that I did a little pod on today was Joe Callahan and Jared Evans, who are both Packers quarterbacks and more likely to play in the next couple weeks than Aaron Rodgers, because, you know, rest in peace also. However, this is the season that we know the Packers are also going to get to, like, the top 10 and then draft the quarterback of the future that'll take over behind Rodgers, because, you know, that's how the Packers draft. Favre has a bad year. They draft Rodgers. Rodgers dies, basically, and now they're going to draft whoever, you know. What's the kid's name from USC? Sam Darnold? We're going to draft him behind you guys taking Lamar Jackson. Is he good? I don't know.
I honestly don't know if any of the quarterbacks are good. I haven't really dug into it.
Joe Callahan's good for, like, if you have a 30-team league.
Yeah, there you go.
But that's all you want. That was my whole point, is both of our teams are injured and dead and terrible.
Yeah, I mean, I think mine's a little more injured and dead and terrible, but I guess it's not a competition. Oh, well, I guess it kind of is.
We could make it a competition. Are you gonna take the Packers with a lower or a higher win total at the end of the season?
Absolutely.
Okay, I'm in for this. I'll take the Giants. Packers defense is much worse than the Giants.
Yeah, but I still think the Packers offense is going to be better than the Giants.
You really think Brett Hundley, with all of zero NFL starts, is a better NFL quarterback than Eli Manning right now? Or can run a better offense?
I'm saying offense with Jordy, Devontae Adams, and Martellus Bennett, I think is better than Eli throwing to the people we talked about before. Green Bay already has a 3-win head start.
That's true. That is true. It is a +3 handicap. Well, okay, how about this? I will take Green Bay.
I don't think the Giants get to 4 wins.
Really?
Green Bay has that.
Huh. So I was going to say, I would take Green Bay -4. Am I doing that right? No, I would take the Giants +4. Cover the spread at least.
Yes, that's still so from that's, here on out.
Yeah, from here on out, win-loss record, I think I would take the Giants, actually.
Nah, I think I'm still going to go with Green Bay.
Really? Wow. Okay. Yeah. Let's make this a podcast board bet. We'll put this into our, you know, we had our preseason, you know, bets. We'll add this into that. I'm down.
Right. Done.
Oh, God. Both of these teams suck, though. Yeah. Demaryius Randall's going to start a cornerback.
We basically just switched allegiances for our teams.
Yeah. Well, this is what happens.
We're now going to be rooting for the other person's team.
This is now what happens when you're tanking. Yeah. Stuff gets weird.
All right.
Case Keenum is going to lead the Vikings to an NFC North title.
Until Teddy Bridgewater comes back.
Teddy Bridgewater still doesn't have knees.
You take that back.
They're skinny and then also broken, Dan. I love his skinny knees, but come on.
No, it was cool to see him practice. I don't think he plays this year, but
yeah, I hope
that
he
might play next year is exciting.
Right, especially because of the whole issue with Sam Bradford possibly having career-threatening knee problems. It's bonkers.
Right.
Football is a dangerous game. Let's leave it at that.
that it is.
Shall we move into our main topic of discussion then for the night, Dan?
Yeah, I guess we can do that.
All right, so this is your baby. Do you want to explain our project for the evening?
Yeah, sure. Well, just going to go through like a little mini all underrated team so far this season. Some of it's going to be kind of real life, a little bit's going to be, you know, fantasy, but this is just basically, I think, a couple of guys who are producing or, you know, doing well and are not really getting the love they deserve, I believe.
Yeah. And I'm pumped. There's going to be some good stuff in here. You know, one of the big things that people both love and complain about is the fact that fantasy drives a lot of interest in the NFL. Like, at this point, you know, there's a huge fantasy industry that goes along with the NFL. But a lot of people don't think about the numbers behind the fantasy numbers. Like, you know, dude has a terrible day for value, for expected value, which is kind of like what we look at NumberFire. But he has a big fantasy day, like Deshaun Kizer does every single week. You know, like that's, they see that and they think, oh, well, maybe he's actually good. But we're here to pop a little bit of that bubble and prop up some of these guys who are actually surprisingly awesome. I'm pumped. Should we start with quarterbacks?
Let's do it.
Awesome. Who do you have for your QB underrated?
So mine is going to be Marcus Mariota. And so if we're doing fantasy-wise, Mariota has definitely not been great this year. He is, I believe, like QB 17 for doing that. And if you probably drafted Marcus Mariota, that's not where you expected him to be. But if we go by some of our number fire metrics here, Marcus Mariota has been really good. By passing net expected points per dropback, Marcus Mariota is fifth in the league among quarterbacks who have dropped back at least 100 times. There are 32 of them. So the quarterbacks in front of him right now are Brady, Alex Smith, Drew Brees, and Carson Wentz. And now if we go by passing success rate, which is just the percentage of plays that have been positive by our net expected points, Mariota is third. And all of this has been done, and this is kind of why he hasn't really been a fantasy asset, is he hasn't thrown touchdown passes, which, you know, that kind of an important part of being a quarterback, sure, but he has been the fifth best quarterback by net expected points and the third best by success rate without doing the thing that gives you the most points and the most success. So he's only thrown four touchdown passes this year. That's a 2.8% touchdown rate, which is well below his 5.1 and 5.8 in the past 2 years. So we are going to expect Marcus Mariota to throw more touchdown passes for the rest of the season. I can't imagine he's going to have a sub 3 touchdown rate. So he's been really good so far. I expect him to be even better for the rest of the season. And that was a very long rant on why I think Marcus Mariota is a very good quarterback. Right, so Mariota has only rushed 17 times, which is, tied for ninth among quarterbacks. By rushing NEP, he is already fifth. And as we saw on Monday night, he doesn't really need rushing to be a good quarterback. He could not run on Monday. And of course, it was against the Colts defense. But he was able to stand in the pocket and fire some shots downfield, and he did not need to scramble in order to be a good quarterback.
Right. And put him up against the Browns defense this week, and he's going to just light it up. I think that's pretty safe to say. Pretty easy call there. Bold strategy here. But, no, love Mariota. There's not a lot for me to disagree with. I like him a lot.
Yeah, and part of this is just like when people in general, I think, talk about the best young quarterbacks, I don't think Mariota gets put in that discussion often enough. This year, it's Wentz because he's actually playing, you know, pretty well. Goff, we've put in there.
Well, Goff, though, is because he's so night and day from last year. It's the narrative.
Right. Right. But I just think when people talk about that, Mariota is maybe the fourth or fifth quarterback who gets put in that discussion. And I think he already is and going to be way better than that.
I when I look at Mariota, I see a lot more of like young Aaron Rodgers than anything else. And that's weird to say because nobody's that hyper efficient, but he's really close, and he adds that same kind of mobility that Rodgers has. He's not a runner. He's not in the NFL. He's not a runner like he was at Oregon, but he's a mobile and dangerous quarterback in multiple ways. He's got the red zone efficiency. He's got the ability to keep a game not blown up. You know, he limits his turnovers, and he hits the guys that he needs to. He's really good. That's Rodgers. You know, I'm not crazy, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'd probably wouldn't.
I mean more stylistically, no, sure. Not value-wise, statistically.
Sure.
Yeah, anyway.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So my guy then, Mariota's been incredible. My guy here is one that I actually just dumped on a little bit a minute ago. And for me, it's Case Keenum. I don't know how to explain this, but man, this is a good offense, apparently, because Case Keenum is 12th in the NFL among quarterbacks with 100 dropbacks or more. He's 12th in passing NEP per dropback right now. And now Keenum has thrown 5 touchdowns to 1 interception. He has a 7.13 passing yards per attempt. He's got a 64% completion rate, which is the highest of his career by a significant margin. I mean, man alive, dude is doing some work. And on top of that, like in fantasy, he's like not outstanding, but he's still like top 20 at the position, just behind Jared Goff in points per game. Might I add that Case Keenum, at least if you have fractional scoring, you know, point whatever, Case Keenum has a cool 69 points as his fantasy total right now heading into week 7. We're talking about Case Keenum. Case Keenum has a better passing NEP per dropback than Cam Newton, Derek Carr, Matt Ryan, Russell Wilson, Tyrod Taylor, Dak Prescott. Like, that's weird. I don't know that I like the NFL simultaneously. I love the NFL in 2017. I also kind of hate the NFL in 2017. Now, to pour a little cold water on this, Keenum is 18th in passing success rate, like consistency of a positive value added, which is to say that he's lumped in a nice little block here with Eli Manning and Mike Glennon. So it's not like he's been consistent, but he's been impactful. And that is shocking to me.
Yeah, I think you can be in that group of success rate and have high, you know, NEP and value when you're chucking the ball up to Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen. That seems to be a very nice thing for quarterbacks to do, especially this year. Both of them have seemed to kind of taken that step forward that we kind of wanted them to do. I think that's what some of us kind of saw in them. So they're just kind of, they're going up and they're grabbing stuff just kind of out of the air. It's not always particularly well thrown balls, but I mean, it takes a certain amount of skill just to get it in the area. And I think not all quarterbacks would be able to do that.
And granted, you know, the Vikings offensive line is a lot better too. Like the offense is just significantly improved around him. You're right. But also not to take away from him, no Dalvin Cook, you know, no Stephon Diggs has had a groin injury for a couple weeks now that's been messing with him. Like, yes, Adam Thielen is really good, and the league missed on him by letting him go on. Was he 7th round, I think? He went stupid late or undrafted. I can't remember now.
Maybe he was undrafted.
Maybe he was then. But it's just, the fact that an undrafted receiver is allowing Case Keenum to be this impactful is shocking and surprising and awesome to me.
Yeah, fair point.
Shall we move on? Are there any honorable mentions you want to name?
No, I think we can move on. I think all the other guys who have been pretty good are, I think, recognized as pretty good.
I would like to note that Sean Mannion has one drop back, and currently has 1.11 passing NEP per dropback, which is triple the next highest guy. So good on him for that. But no one really cares. We're going to move on.
Yeah, right. So my running back is, I think, someone who is getting some run as someone who is good, at least this year. But maybe they don't know really how good he's been. And this is mostly also underrated in a sense that his own coach will not put him in more. So this right now is to you, Jay Gruden. Play Chris Thompson more often because he is the best back you have on your roster. So if we're going to go back here, among running backs with at least 20 carries, there are 68 of them this year. Thompson is 14th in rushing NEP per attempt. That is actually tied with Rob Kelly. He should be getting more. Now, where he really comes into play is when he is catching passes. So among running backs who have been targeted 20 or more times, Thompson is first in reception NEP and is first by a lot in reception NEP per target. And now, when running backs get thrown the ball, it's not nearly as efficient as when wide receivers are thrown the ball. But if we put together all pass catchers who have been targeted at least 20 times this season, Chris Thompson is first in reception NEP per target by a lot. He is at 1.24, which means there is more than a point added to the expected points every time Chris Thompson is targeted. Not even when he catches the ball, when he's targeted, there's 1.24 points added. That's really, really good.
Yeah, it seems okay. I mean, throw the ball in his area three times and you get a field goal of expected points. That seems all right.
Yeah, it's just every time the ball has been in his hands, it's been a big play this year.
Yeah, it's not to detract from Chris Thompson being awesome. It's not hard to be better than Rob Kelly and or right now Samaje Perine, but like Samaje. I feel like I'm getting that inflection wrong and hopefully somebody corrects me. But
but that's just on the ground.
Right. Right. And then you add the air.
Thompson adds in the passing game.
Yeah, it's bonkers. It's absolutely bananas. Dude is really good.
Yeah, but Jay Gruden also is like one of the most stubborn head coaches. He's also the guy who will continue to call fades on third and goal for the rest of time, even though none of them have worked ever. But he still thinks they will, so he's going to keep calling it. So, and he's also been reported as saying he's not going to give Chris Thompson more touches because he's not the every down back. So Dan, I just don't know, man.
Dan's not tilting.
It doesn't make sense.
I have no idea. I mean, Jay Gruden did enough good things with Giovanni Bernard in Cincinnati that I don't understand why this is any different, frankly. But, you know, he's the NFL head coach. We're just sitting here on a podcast, NBD. What do we know? Play him more, please. For the love of the children. Yeah. No, Chris Thompson's been scary good. Another guy that I do want to highlight here is a versatile back, or he was a versatile back in the day. And he's a guy that has not been everything that we hope for and more in recent years. And that's Jamaal Charles. And Jamaal Charles, once upon a time, would have been a top 3, 4, 5 dynasty running back. And nowadays, he is currently producing the 58th most fantasy points per game, which is not great, Bob, to cop a term from Mad Men. But the crazy thing is that Jamal Charles is producing a fair amount of success in limited sample. On 38 rushes this year, he has 2.71 rushing NEP, and that totals to 11th best among the same group as you were talking about, Dan. That's in the same category as Leonard Fournette and Tevin Coleman and LeGarrette Blount. And yes, a little bit better than Rob Kelly. He's been shockingly effective and been shockingly efficient as well. Jamal Charles is the second best running back in rushing success rate this year among these same guys, behind only James White. So he's been consistent. He's been effective. And no, they haven't been using him as a receiving back, but he probably can't really get out into space that much anymore, which I don't blame him. He doesn't really have knees. But it is crazy to me that Jamal Charles, after all these knee surgeries and at age 30 and, you know, on a team whose offensive line is as awful looking as Denver's, is doing this kind of stuff. So good on you, old guy.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really nice to see him healthy again, or at least as healthy as he's going to be. Like you said, he's not really, you know, the Jamal Charles of past, which, you know, we shouldn't really expect him to be. But just seeing him being able to run is awesome, because I'm not sure this is something we really thought was going to happen.
Yeah, no, I don't. I definitely didn't. I thought, you know, I didn't even think that he was going to get any run in that backfield, frankly, with C.J. Anderson and Devontae Booker. But, you know, he's carving himself out a role, which is good. One little honorable mention, too, I want to highlight is Deion Lewis, and he's currently third in rushing NEP per play this season on 30 rushes, 0.16. Really impactful, and he's only been playing a small amount so far because of injury, and he's only got 7 targets. However, he's caught all 7 targets, which is nice. He has also a strong target NEP of 2.06 total. His reception NEP per target is 0.29. It's a little bit less than Chris Thompson's. He's not nearly as good as Chris Thompson, don't worry. But, like, he's still producing, too, and he's a guy that we thought was basically out of that Patriots backfield by the time this rolled around, you know, in the preseason. We thought Burkhead and White and Gillisley were going to be the three. Lewis might be taking over the backfield again. Who the hell knows?
Yeah, who the hell knows? Yeah, he probably should. Like you said, James White leads the league in success rate. So, man, who knows what's going on in that backfield? Pretty much whoever they put behind there has been good. I guess it probably doesn't even really matter. But, yeah, who knows who's going to be taking those carries going forward.
Yep. Any other honorable mentions, or shall we move on to our wide receivers?
Quickly, I don't think we really give enough credit to how good Derrick Henry has been.
Oh, God, yeah.
Among running backs with 50 or more carries, there have been 33 of them. Derrick Henry is tied with Kareem Hunt at the top for rushing NEP per attempt. He's getting more of the late game carries when Tennessee needs to put the game away. And he's been really good at that. He has been way better than DeMarco Murray. Who's 18th and actually is producing negative rushing NEP per attempt. So I think Henry should get a little more run there, but I think we should really acknowledge how good he has been in what role he's been asked to play this season.
Wait, he's been as good as Kareem Hunt?
On a per-carry basis, yep.
And has Kareem Hunt been good?
I think Kareem Hunt's been okay.
Okay, just making sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that seems like a pretty high compliment. I would say Derrick Henry's been good then.
Yeah. Yes, he has.
Man, yeah. I love to see the young guy taking over. Hopefully he gets more snaps now. That would be great. Come on, Malarkey, do it.
Yeah, it would be, I mean... who knows? You can't ask Mike Mularkey to do anything rational. But all right, so I guess I didn't mean to make this like a full Tennessee podcast, but if we're going to move on to wide receiver, my underrated guy is going to be Rishard Matthews. He deserves this spot for like the past like 4 years, where he's been just one of the most efficient wide receivers that no one knows or talks about. So among wide receivers with 35 or more targets, and there are 37 of those, Matthews is 8th in reception NEP per target. He is 14th in just reception NEP. He is, I believe, the only receiver of those 37 to have a reception success rate. So a success rate on balls he catches of, he's batting 1,000. Every reception he's had has been a success. No other receiver targeted 35 or more times can say that. He's just a really great route runner, which I think meshes really well with what Marcus Mariota has to do in that offense, just kind of finding some intermediate routes. And the two of them together have really pulled some stuff off. And Rishard Matthews has been, I think, one of the most underrated receivers for like the past couple of years, even dating back to like his last season at Miami before he was a free agent.
Yeah, he's good. I feel like we have a fluff piece on Rishard Matthews every single year at Number Fire in the preseason. And it's so well deserved. It's just very funny that it's like, okay, are we doing the like, quarterback rankings, and okay, who's got the mock draft article? Okay, and where's the Rishard Matthews piece? Rishard Matthews is underrated piece, because it is every single year that people are like, No, dude is good. It's not any one overwhelming trait he has. It's just that he's a quality receiver, runs good routes, has sure hands. I mean, he produces every single season. Part of me wants to rebel against this instinct as well, but I'm going to go with it. While we're making this an entire Tennessee Titans podcast, I'm going to make this a former Titan. I'm going to get a former Titan in on the action, and I'm going to talk about Kendall Wright. And the same way that Number Fire every year covers an underrated Rishard Matthews piece, Dan, I have to cover, and by have to, I mean in my soul to satisfy my spirit, I have to cover a Kendall Wright is underrated piece. And sure enough, dude, 26 targets this year, Kendall Wright has produced 22.23 reception NEP. That gives him 0.86 for the year, and that's 12th most against receivers with at least 20 receptions. 15 receptions. He's good. He's really good right now. I love it. And I love it that it's on such a bad Bears team, especially because he has such a quality success rate as well. And it's 95%. Yeah, he's running short routes, but he's like taking stuff far and it's consistent. And I know that the 77% catch rate, the 76.9% catch rate is not as high as some guys like Rishard Matthews or even Jermaine Kearse, which is really, that's a weird stat that Jermaine Kearse has an 81% catch rate. I didn't know that until now. That's very odd. I don't like that. I don't like the NFL this year. But Kendall Wright, he has been really impactful and really consistent on a team that's been marred by terrible quarterback play. I'm going to Kendall Wright as my undervalued guy this year.
Yeah, I think this is the one year where you could say that and it actually be correct. I feel like you said, this is one of the things like, oh man, this is going to be the Kendall Wright breakout year. Like, he's finally got all this talent. He's going to put it together. And I hesitate to say this is actually the year because, we still have like more than half the year left to go. But so far, he has actually done some things which are good.
But I don't know that he's going to break out this year. Like, that's the thing, is he's been good. I don't think he's going to break out because he is being held down by a terrible, terrible offense. Like, that is he might break out for us, value and metrically, but there is no way he's posting good yardage this year. Right now in fantasy, he is 67th in points per game among wide receivers. Let me just make sure what his receiving total is here. Currently through 6 games, he has 236 yards and 1 touchdown on those 26 targets. So it's not like he's lighting the world aflame. But, yeah, analytically, he's up at the top again. And, God, I just hope that Mitch Trubisky... I say this as a fan of a Packers team that's now rebuilding in 2017. I kind of hope Mitch Trubisky goes nuts so that Kendall Wright can break out. I don't want to ever say that sentence again, Dan.
Yeah, it's a weird thing to think, but if that's what you got to do, go for it.
Can we delete this podcast and just call 2017 done?
Yeah, it's a really weird year. I know nothing.
All that we know is that we know nothing.
Yeah, and I feel the more time that has gone on in this season, I feel like the less grasp I have of what is actually going on.
It's like I don't know, man. I don't even have a metaphor for it. Screw it. Let's move on to tight ends.
All right, let's move on. So my tight end is going to be Cameron Brate of Tampa Bay. So Tampa Bay used a first-round pick on O.J. Howard, who was looked at as the best tight end in this class, and he has still been really good. But Cameron Brate has still been the go-to in that offense. He's got 30 targets, and he leads all tight ends in reception NEP per target at 1.06, which is just above Rob Gronkowski at 1.05. So you think Tampa Bay uses a lot of 2 tight end sets, and they've still been going to Brate, and especially in the red zone again, and he's been that guy, and that role really hasn't decreased for him with the addition of Howard, and even with Mike Evans still there now. I mean, DeSean Jackson is not going to be your red zone guy, but even with him as a receiver, Brate is still carving out that role as the guy who can get you touchdowns, and when you need somebody to play big, that it's been Brate so far.
Cameron Brate is it's nuts how good he's doing. Like, I don't understand 2017, and this is probably the worst possible timeline we could have been thrust into, but this is a year where Cameron Brate is outscoring Travis Kelce in points per game.
Yeah, it's weird.
You predicted that going into the year, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. No, I he's great. And this is my big thing. We were talking off air about this a bit, Dan, is I actually tried to trade for Cameron Brate in one of my dynasty leagues. And I think where I'm going wrong, it was a rejected offer. I offered a third-round pick for him, and the guy said that it was too low, and I'm thinking about this. I'm like, man, you can still get a lot of really good dynasty players in the second round. Like, you know, guys like Aaron Jones went in the second round this year. And just talking, this is an IDP league I'm in, but just talking offensive players, like Zay Jones is outside the top 16 and whatever you feel about Zay Jones. Dante Foreman, Curtis Samuel, Marlon Mack, Tariq Cohen, Samaje Perine, Chris Carson, Pat Mahomes, all these guys were going outside of the first round that you could still get at that point. So I'm just like, okay, is Brate really worth a second round pick in dynasty leagues to me? Because right now it feels like he's a stopgap for Howard. Or do we think, I don't know, Dan, do we think that Cutter is going to keep using Howard as a blocker next year? Is this clock actually slower for development than we think? Or I don't know. I kind of assumed that Howard would start taking over the role towards the end of this season. But do they like his blocking enough to just keep him in line?
Do you know what? I mean, they still might. There might be room for both of these guys to succeed, I think.
That might be something. I don't know if we've done any pieces on that for Number Fire, but that might be something I want to look at, actually, is how many offenses have supported 2 tight ends for fantasy recently.
Yeah.
Because it would be interesting to see. I feel like their styles are pretty close too, though, which worries me.
Sure, but I think for someone like Jameis Winston, if you could have the just throw it up and they'll be there. I think the more of those guys you can have, probably the better. And they have that with Evans. They have that with this speed-wise, just kind of throw it downfield and hope someone is under it with DeSean Jackson. So maybe if you have Howard and Brate, you kind of have like the sort of what, I mean, I don't want to compare Jameis Winston to Josh McCown, but it's kind of like what they set up with him in Chicago, where you just had everyone was like over 6'4".
Can you
all you had to do was just throw it up.
Can you imagine what, you know, not Bucks era Vincent Jackson, but like prime Vincent Jackson would have been in this offense this year?
This would have been great. Probably what they were hoping when they, you know, first signed him. But yeah, that would have been pretty good too.
That would have been fun. Anyway, yeah, Cameron Brate's really good this year. If you're in a dynasty league and, you know, especially a contract league where he's on a one-year deal, get him. My guy here is somebody that I think is, it's not that he's just undervalued. I think he's post hype is what I would call him. This was the year that we all decided, last year was the year that we mostly decided that Kobe Fleener was going to be freed and succeed and would be the superstar Jimmy Graham in the Saints offense, you know, take over that role and really be the athletic tight end that Drew Brees loves and splits the seams with, and he was not that last year. And then this year we're like, okay, it's totally going to happen this year. It's fine. He was getting used to the new offense. It's totally going to work. And so far he is 23rd among tight ends in fantasy points per game, which just in case you're wondering, is a few spots behind a Ben Watson and a few spots ahead of a Ryan Griffin. So that's not good. That's really not good. But Kobe Fleener is still producing a lot. He's been targeted 16 times, and among tight ends to be targeted at least 15 times this year, he's fourth in reception NEP per target. On top of that, I mean, this is our Rishard Matthews moment right here. 100% reception success rate. So every single time he's caught the ball, he's gone for positive value. There are more tight ends who have done that than receivers. But the fact of the matter is that Fleener has been consistent. He's been low used, but he's been consistent and he's been impactful when he's caught the ball. You know, even his catch rate is fine. It's a solid, 68.75%. For a guy who busts the seams, that's pretty okay by me. So I wish the Saints would use more Kobe Fleener this year. I think with Willie Snead coming back, that's not going to be the case, which is unfortunate. But he's been quality, and he's not getting recognized for that.
Yeah, he's definitely been one of definitely more useful in that offense than he has been definitely last year. So when you do look at that, he probably should be used a little more. But man, the Saints are just kind of doing their Saints thing where they just kind of find wide receivers all over the place. They've been using like Tommy Lee Lewis. Brandon Coleman has been a thing in that offense. So when you see what Fleener has needed to be in that offense, and I think they kind of found out that maybe he shouldn't be the guy who's targeted 100 times in that offense. So I think they've kind of found the right mix of what he needs to do in relation to what the other receivers in that offense need to do. But I think he's done much better in that role than he was as like the highly targeted pass catcher last year.
Right. It's true. He's much more efficient. He's been much more efficient on lower volume, and that's been good. They're using him for what they need to. It is, you just wish, it's those tantalizing things where you, and this is what tantalizes us about Fleener and Indy too, is God, but what if he could keep this up at a high rate, you know?
Right.
Yeah, I think.
But I think we've seen he probably can't.
Right, he can't. It's those flashes, those that taste. I want the taste, Dan. I got a fix. I got a Kobe Fleener fix. I need. Do you have any honorable mentions here? Because I've got, I think, one or two really quick that I won't go into deep, but
Maybe I think Austin Hooper, I think is someone who we should probably talk about. He's not getting a lot of volume in the Atlanta offense, but for some reason, no one is getting a lot of volume in that Atlanta offense. But when you consider the volume Hooper is getting compared to Julio Jones, maybe Hooper should be getting a little less volume. He's been really good. I think he was one of my favorite tight ends coming out last year. And I think he's having a pretty solid second season.
Yep. Love Austin Hooper. Right now his fantasy points are still kind of buoyed by that one big receiving play that he killed the Bears with. But, you know, he's still been quality. He's still been consistent, even aside from that. All right, Dan. Well, we are pushing an hour here. Why don't we wrap it up? So a couple underrated guys for you guys to look out for on Sundays or in your fantasy leagues. If you want to know more deep underrated players, Dan, where can they find you on the Twitterverse?
You can find me at Dan Pizzuta. And then you can also find the podcast at FP_pod. You can also send us an email for some questions or whatever you would like to email us. Well, maybe not whatever you would like to email us. Let's set a little bit of a bar there. But you can find it at forwardprogresspod@gmail.com. And then you can subscribe and comment on iTunes and SoundCloud and Google Play and all the other places where podcasts can be found.
You don't want people emailing us clips of the Giants' victory over the Broncos ruining their winless season, set to Celine Dion's, you know, song from Titanic?
God, I hope no one would spend the time in their day to do that.
For everyone's sake, don't do that. For your own sake, don't do that.
Yeah.
And you can always find me on Twitter at @JAYARRNFL. All of our writing is at numberfire.com. Both of us, Dan also writes for Big Blue View, a number of other places. I also write for DynastyLeagueFootball.com and a number of other places. And we will get back to you guys again next time with another show.